to he who sets a leprechaun free. Steal his gold. It will corrupt your soul, you see. For many a moon, the legend has grown. Death toll increases. Solution unknown.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus Leprechaun retrospective series.
I'm here to claim me golden shillings. No, give them back, or there might be killings.
Hosted by Jacob.
Poor misguided Jacob. You still have to pay the devil.
Stuart.
Scream as you may, scream as you might. If you try to escape, you'll be dead on this night.
And Arnie.
We're like me and you, even as hell all the way through.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and explicit language.
As Shakespeare said, shit happens.
Listener discretion is advised.
Now, me boyo, we'll show what kind of man you really are.
So the first question I have is, now that we've seen the trailer that's been released, how closely will it kind of adhere to the tongue-in-cheek Leprechaun series that we've seen? Because this one seems like it's been shot better. That's maybe
all right.
But some beautiful shots of like scenery and that kind of thing in the opening part of the trailer, so I'm just curious how close will it be to the original tongue-in-cheek versus something that seems maybe a little more serious.
Yeah. It's not tongue-in-cheek at all. It's much more, the approach was kind of more like a Guillermo del Toro style, kind of R-rated, kind of legitimate, terrifying horror film. Something which is challenging when you have the premise of a leprechaun, but from the beginning it was like, what can we do to really make something that is actually going to be kind of an elevated horror film that kind of makes you actually be like, oh, crap, it's kind of like disgusting or terrifying or like kind of surprise audiences in that way. I think the previous franchise did an awesome job at being tongue-in-cheek, and that's kind of what made it what it was. And the idea here was really to start fresh and kind of look at kind of the origins of leprechauns and what could be the creature that's there that isn't kind of a little guy in a green suit that kind of is hard to make scary, but what's kind of the mythology behind that that actually could be legitimately scary. Like 2,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago, the Celtics, if they met something that, you know, was something terrifying to them, that then became the story that we all know as kind of the Lucky Charms thing. But there might be something at the beginning of that that was really scary. And that's kind of what we bring to life.
So, cool.
Yeah. But yeah, it's an R-rated, full-on horror film.
Right, yeah. I noticed Dylan doesn't have, or from what we can see at least, as the leprechaun, he doesn't have that kind of makeup that we were talking about.
Yeah.
Is it more traditional, like this is just an evil person, a leprechaun, versus the makeup that we're used to seeing?
As very soon the leprechaun look will be revealed. And he was in 3 hours of makeup a day.
Oh, okay.
In and out. So that meant he was in it when he was at lunch, you know. It was a full-on endeavor. Like, full-body makeup. The entire thing. Every day. So, he did a really good job of kind of enduring through that. Because it's like, and once you're under that stuff, like, there's no escape. Like, all you have is, like, a straw and, like, for drinking things.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
Anybody else?
Did you actually film on location?
No, we filmed in Canada, which is where I'm from. Yeah, me and the Saskas are both from Vancouver. So we filmed it there. Lots of fog and mist and, you know, Celtic ditties.
Do you actually believe in any, like cryptozoology, like kind of mythological creatures?
Well, I just love the idea of where the stories begin, because I think often they kind of get transformed into things, and I was also involved in another film called Afflicted, which again was kind of the origin of another kind of mythological creature. And I love the idea of, if you do it that way, you have some leeway to take the parts that you think are really badass and update those, but also kind of the ones that are a bit more silly, you don't need, or maybe don't fit into the genre that you're using. Like, granting wishes and stuff is a fairly, you know, ungrounded kind of thing, but something that's tiny and small and loves gold, and, you know, and lives in Ireland, it, like, you know, that could be pretty terrifying. You know?
Yeah, I like the idea of the creature eating gold as opposed to just
There's some pretty disgusting scenes in the film where unfortunate people have gold on their body. And, and they're in the wrong country for that.
How much of the original mythology did you research?
Yeah, we researched into kind of Celtic lore and terms and language and that kind of stuff, and that plays into it. Because the characters are in a very old town that's kind of off the beaten track, you know, a place they shouldn't be, that time's kind of lost to time. So it kind of really has that great kind of I don't know, one of my favorite movies is Goonies, and there's a scene that's like, I was like, this is Goonies, like, because they're kind of like, you know, going through all the old kind of mythology of it all and stuff, and I was pretty excited by that. It's like,
did the mythology impact a lot of your style for cinematography? Did it for the dressing and the stylings of what you wanted him to look like at the end?
Yeah, like, on the cinematography side, like I said, that kind of old, like, we use tons of atmosphere, tons of, it's almost entirely shot at night, so, like, everything has that misty, kind of foggy kind of look. We also, all the characters always have flashlights and stuff, so always is kind of flaring and misty and has shadows and streams of light, which really gave it this kind of ambience of something that was kind of soaked in history, which I really liked. And then as far as his look, we really looked at a lot of creatures because we thought maybe he came from underground, like came from a gold mine, you know, like, or a natural cave that had gold deposits. So really underground creatures like naked mole rats and Gollum and, like, you know, these kind of things that kind of look like walking scrotums, you know what I mean? Like, kind of like their skin is all, like, gross and, like, something that's crawled out of, that's been hiding in the, you know, somewhere for a long time. It was kind of the inspiration for that, so we looked at a lot of disgusting things on the internet to, like, composite together for his look.
Did Dylan ever actually freak you out on stage in the makeup and everything?
He loved sneaking up on people, and also because of his size, like, attacking you from without you knowing it, definitely. And he had some prosthetic extensions and stuff on his body, and so he could kind of, like, do all sorts of hilarious things. But he's a pretty really fun, lighthearted kind of, like, prankster. So I wouldn't necessarily say he was scaring us, but he was always making us roll with laughter while we're trying to get these scenes, because we have this terrifying little creature, and then he would crack these jokes or do things that were just, like, so funny. But looking at him, it was like, you know, it didn't fit with the guy that was underneath it at all. It was pretty hilarious.
Did you go back and watch any of the old Leprechaun films to try to do callbacks or?
Yeah, it's very much its own new franchise, a very much a reboot, but of course it fits into a greater whole. So there's a lot of references, I think, that people might notice, like certain iconic props and things like that. They're kind of like in the back of scenes and, like, or character names, like stuff like that, where we kind of are tipping a hat and nodding to it, not as much as kind of taking direct story beats or anything, but there's an acknowledgement of the kind of the legacy of where it comes from.
And what drew you to the Leprechaun reboot?
I think it was the idea, the challenge really, of, like, when they put it to me, it was like, we actually do want to do something, because I was kind of like, I mean, guys, leprechauns are not that scary, you want to make an R-rated movie, like, and they were like, well, we really want to find a way of finding the roots of what is terrifying about it, and that was a cool challenge. And then also to be able to reinvent a mythology that way is kind of awesome for a creator, because you can kind of be like, okay, here's the challenge, what can we do to kind of bring this to life in a way that totally surprises people. I kind of actually hope people tune in to it expecting something kind of fun and silly, so their guard's down, and then as stuff starts to go haywire, they're just, like, horrified. Hopefully that would be probably even better.
And this is going to be, you said, rated R, so did you have to cut anything to get an R rating, or?
You mean from, like, an NC-17?
Yeah, yeah.
No, it was never NC-17. but it's a solid R. There's some pretty... Even I just watched the movie again a few days ago, and there was this one shot where I was like, oh, man. It's like, kind of, I hadn't seen it in a little while, and it was, like, some pretty graphic stuff, which would be cool, I think, for people to kind of be shocked by.
What exactly do you want people to come away with after watching the movie? Do you want them to be afraid to go to, like, Ireland or any of these other places that you've been filming at? Or
I think I just was, like I said, the ambition was to make a legitimately scary movie from something that inherently isn't scary. So I would love for them to come away with it feeling like, wow, that was actually like way scarier and way better than I was expecting. Like I was, maybe they're expecting to put it in to get a laugh, and they come out of it like, wow, that was, I actually, you know, jumped into my boyfriend's arms and screamed. You know, something like that would be good. But basically just people coming away with it being really impressed by coming in, I think, with a certain pessimism to just culturally something that is funny, but realizing that actually it was something that scared them.
But it's, do you have any plans,
or at least disgusted them?
Do you have any plans to follow this up with another mythology-based movie of some sort?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on tons of movies, and obviously this franchise is ripe for having many movies, as they made many before. I don't know if this franchise will get into space, but there'll be. But yeah,
into the hood.
Maybe the Irish hood.
Are you looking to get into the other fake creatures like sprites and brownies and such like that?
It'd be pretty crazy to see an R-rated sprite movie. That would be something. Although maybe I was thinking of Pan's Labyrinth. With some of those were pretty scary with their little sprites, but more when they were being eaten and ripped in half. That wasn't so much them, but what the blind man did to them. But yeah, nothing that I don't have any sprite movies in development right now, but I'll let you know if I do.
Do you have plans to bring in any of the other mythological creatures from Ireland in sequels?
I think sequels are wide open. Definitely the film leaves opportunity for extra movies, and so where those go, I think, is still an open question, but something that's exciting to see. Now that the box gets opened, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff can come out.
You mentioned Guillermo del Toro a couple times. You mentioned Goonies. What other cinematic influences did you draw from for Leprechaun?
Yeah, I mean, my I grew up on really the kind of Spielbergian kind of group of films, like not even the ones he directed but ones he produced, and that whole kind of, like, my favorite films are Jurassic Park is probably one of my, probably if not my favorite film. There's a scene in this is basically like the paddock scene from Jurassic Park but with a leprechaun. The same kind of look, and at night with rain on the car, and like, you know, what the fuck, what's going on? Sorry, I didn't say that.
It's
all internet here. Yeah,
it's funny.
Just put a not safe for work disclaimer on that one. But that kind of Spielbergian suspense and build and payoff is something that has been part of my nature from the very beginning. I'm also, most of the films that I love are also a lot of adventure films. Like, that's probably my favorite, one of my favorite genres. So my horror films do end up being kind of like horror adventure films. Like, people are going from place to place and being killed off one by one, but it's also an adventure through it, trying to get out of it. So it always has that kind of set pieces that kind of build with complexity and never looks like they're going to escape, but somehow they do. Like, I love that from Indiana Jones. Like that.
With that kind of taken into account, you know, you look at Jaws and the shark is iconic, but that movie focused very much on Brody. We've talked a lot about Dylan here. And what about the human victim counterparts? Did you spend a lot of time trying to develop characters for them?
Yeah, the cool thing is there's kind of two groups of characters in this. There's the group of kids who are going to this Irish town and obviously start running into a lot of bad luck. But then there's the Irish folk themselves, who are really interesting characters that kind of play with, they're people who are living there with this creature and struggling with how to best deal with it, something they've been trying to kill for many years and they can't. And so they are moral people, but also they need to protect their own. And so there's an interesting moral question there that I think really is kind of the heart of the film. There's a relationship between a father and son from the Irish side who are sort of the antagonists to a degree, but there's a really interesting kind of dynamic there that I think comes through really well. And then the kids have their own inner dynamics that are great. And kind of, you know, the lead girl kind of going through her own arc of kind of often when you are forced into situations of duress, it forces to the top issues that are going on in your own personal circle, as people are have to choose between themselves, leaving you behind or not, and all those kind of things. So definitely it's not just kids running from a monster. There's a lot of fun other stuff going on.
Yeah. Something that we haven't talked about too much is working with Dylan, WWE. Were you a fan of the WWE growing up? Did you watch wrestling? If so, what were some of your favorite wrestlers?
Actually, the fun part is I wasn't really that aware of the WWE world, and now I've kind of been pulled into the whole thing. Like, got to go to my first SummerSlam, and I'm going again this year, and really looking forward to it. And like, not only that, but I get to go to SummerSlam and sit there with wrestlers telling me, you know, all the ins and outs of what's going on. You know, it's like when you go to a baseball game with someone who really knows really good baseball. Like, it's actually really fun to kind of come into the whole family and learn so much more about the craft that they actually have and what they're going through, and that they actually are amazing performers to be able to entertain that many people at once. And it does transition quite well, especially for Dylan, because he you know, when he first started was very much a non-verbal performer, and in this he's much more a creature, has to communicate a lot with his body movement and his eyes and everything like that. So I think that helped him a lot.
In WWE, I know that sacrifice your body in the ring and whatnot. Did you have to do any of that during the
interview? Absolutely. I mean, Dylan was such a trooper and never complained once, but was going through a grueling process of a really hard, long time amount of work. And one of the funny parts is he was like, at one point in that paddock scene that I was talking, he's smashing the car as hard as he can to try and get into this car, and he had these arm extensions to make his arms even longer and scarier. And I'm just going, harder, harder. And then he like smashes and broke the arm, and it's like you see like this creature break its arm and then just keep going. And then he like tweeted like, I just broke my arm, and everyone like freaked out.
Thank you.
Now that was quite a load to have to explode. What a lovely lass. I had to blow up your ass, but now I must hit the road.
Once again, thank you for your support of Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this episode in the Now Playing Leprechaun Movie Retrospective Series.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Your support helps keep Now Playing on the air.
Don't be afraid, my dear. I'm Love's own messenger, sent to bring you tidings of joy and the promise of newborn ecstasy.
The film discussed in this podcast is the property of its respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Now Playing Podcast is not affiliated with the makers or distributors of these films.
I was about to say the same thing.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Inganza Media Incorporated.
A valiant try, and right on cue. But if I fall for that, I'm as stupid as you.
Now Playing's Leprechaun Retrospective Series is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2014. All rights reserved, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Where'd you go, me friends? I want to know where me gold is.